Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome everyone to That Android Joe. That's right, episode 8. And no, I'm not JJ, but I'm Joe Steinkamp. JJ is not going to be with us today. However, we wish him all the best in all his travels. He will be back with us on the next episode. But I'll tell you who is here. She's the one that is the rock of this podcast. Hello there, Anna.
Hi, this is Access Anna from the Accessible Android blog. And we have a new person today. We are just giving him a big welcome. And he is...
Steve Nutt from Computer Room Services in the UK.
So Steve is actually coming on board to do some work with us. I'm actually kind of between some things at the moment, and Steve will actually be taking a little bit more of an active role on this podcast. I'm not necessarily going away, but I am actually working on some other things, and Steve will be kind of coming up and giving more information about ice cream sandwich. Yeah, that's right. On this podcast will be three hosts that have ice cream sandwich, leaving me without any... I don't even get to eat gingerbread. I'm still like on 222. So it doesn't mean that I haven't been looking at phones, though. I actually have been very eager to look at phones. And so is Best Buy, because I stopped by there. And they have this neat thing where they can look up and see when your actual date is. And then they have this really neat thing that reminds you that you've crossed your date and you should come in and buy a phone from them. So I'm definitely in the market, and Best Buy thinks I am. So that's probably really, really good. But that's not the news. You know what? We actually do have news. Let's go check it now. So we're going to talk about some interesting stories here that have happened since the last time that we've recorded. And this first story, I thought for sure, should get us a good conversation going here. Larry Page takes the stand during this whole big trial with Oracle and says, you know, this Android thing, it's not really all that important to Google. What do we make of that, guys?
Well, actually, what he says is that it's not important. It's not critical, but it is important. What he's saying during this trial is that Android is mostly a means to getting other Google products out, like their search engine and Gmail, etc.
Yeah, that was my thought exactly, Anna, as you said it. The word critical comes to mind. You know, he didn't say it's not important. He said it's not critical.
So does that cast any doubts into our minds about the future of Android? Is there anything? And while we record this, the trial is still undergoing, so there's all sorts of news coming out of that. And we're not going to follow that too heavily because it's kind of a he said, she said battle going on right now, and it's very, very convoluted. And I haven't seen any major tech sites be able to spout it out in 3 minutes or less without going into Computer Science 101. So for sake of the argument, if you want to learn a lot more about what's going on with that particular trial, I'd head over to Twit and listen to All About Android or Tech News Today or This Week in Google, another great one to be able to follow. But so far, have we learned anything, you guys, that make you worry about being an Android owner?
Not at all.
I Not think me that, either, no.
Yeah, Google is a great thing. The Google search is fantastic, but one of the things I love about having a smartphone is that I can use Google products when I'm on the go. I don't always want to use them when I'm sitting at my house. I want to use them when I'm out and about, when I want to find a sale, when I'm at the store, when I'm working. I want to be able to do some quick research. I want to contact my employer, blah, blah, blah. So I think that it's fantastic that Google is pushing its products on a mobile platform. That's what they're for.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself, really. I mean, we use Google for all kinds of things, you know, QR codes, barcodes, if you want, with Google goggles and all kinds of things. So I don't think Google would personally get rid of Android because it's another way to push advertising at you apart from anything else.
Definitely. But they have gotten rid of some other stuff. True to their word, they said they were going to slim down. About 50 services and programs have been knocked out of the Google ecosystem, including, it looks like, the Talk app for mobiles. Does this bother you guys any?
No, it doesn't bother me because there are so many apps out there that do similar or the same things. And on Android, you know, I mean, Talk is a bit like MSN, isn't it, as such, or you know, anything, or Zello that we were talking about, or Heytel or anything like that. Talk is just a means to communicate. So no, it doesn't bother me in the least.
Well, and it also sounds like it's the Talk mobile web app that is going to be taken away, and you can replace it with any XMPP compatible app or with the app that comes natively on the phone. A lot of phones are still selling with that Google Talks app, so once it's on the phone, you can't get rid of it.
Yeah, I was going to say Talk is natively on. Talk is natively on the Galaxy Nexus anyway, which is a Google phone. So
one of the other things that this article mentioned that interested me, because I'm not a techie person, but I thought it could have some kind of bearing on us, is that it says that they're going to be cutting back on certain APIs, that some of them will have a one-year deprecation cycle and others will not have a
deprecation.
And others will not have a deprecation cycle. So are any of you techie? Did either of you read any of the details about some of these APIs?
I have not read what some of the ones that are mentioned in this article. This isn't too far off from what they did with some other stuff. They've been very good about warning about the changes to Google Maps and changes to some of the other services that they now charge for. The most positive thing I can say is Google has been upfront every step of the way to tell you what they're going to do. Look at the change in the privacy policy. There was lots of emails, and even when you logged in for the first time for anything, there have been changes. In fact, I actually had to upload some videos to our Serotech account, and I got the notification there again of, hey, we changed our privacy policy, and we did an update to iBlink Radio for Android, and hey, we've updated our privacy policy. They've been very forward in saying, look, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're planning on doing it. And this deprecation period is just another way of them saying, okay, kind of sort of get used to the changes that we're going to make. This is going to change. They did that with Translate, Google Translate, and some other services back in 2010 and 2011. So this is, again, one of those things where they're just letting you know ahead of time that services may end or stop or change. And
at that time, we thought Goggles was going to go, didn't we? And Goggles is still here.
Yeah. So
still very much here and being updated.
There's always a reverse course on these things. Certainly the court of public opinion can sway anybody, Apple, Google, any of the major companies. So if there's a real major need for a service, then letting them know, giving feedback, all the teams are very, very conscious of who uses it. I mean, look how long it took for Buzz and Google Wave change. Yeah. So, I mean, It is a very good cooling down period, and it does get people kind of used to how things work, which is, you know, unlike some people. I mean, even right now, Apple is still trying to get people off of MobileMe. So, you know, it just seems like the right thing to do, unlike, you know, say somebody like Facebook who goes, okay, we changed it. Hope you like it. There's no going back.
Yeah. Now, after our last episode, we found out about Project Glass. And Joe, you're really excited about, I think you're the most excited about this project.
I've talked about it on two other podcasts. I'm excited in a way because this is technology that Ray Kurzweil has spoken about for years. And I have a game developer conference where he talked about, at this conference, the creation of the KNFB reader and how much time and effort went into creating that, and all the information that went through it. But then he expands upon it and says, one day I would love this technology to be able to recognize shapes, objects, people's faces, and give you contextual information about them. So somebody could walk into a room and raise up their phone and it would say, hey, there's Joe, Anna, and Steve sitting at a table. The table is green, you know, they're talking, there's nothing on the table, on and on and on. You know, you could change the verbosity or maybe query for more. I'm excited in that this technology is coming to fruition and that it's not science fiction anymore. I mean, 4 or 5 years ago, I would have laughed. But the rapid changes that we have made in speech recognition, in just the way that decision trees work and decision engines work, to be able to process that information on pretty quickly. As a low vision user, I kind of like this because if I could marry it with audible tones or more information, so if I walked into a room, I could get an idea of who's in the room, or if I could get kind of a real-time access point without having to maybe necessarily pull out my phone, or maybe work in concert with my phone. Maybe there's a Bluetooth or some other technology connection that's actually feeding the information back and forth. I'm really excited about the idea of Project Glass. I'm not sure how far off it is, how great it'll be. I don't think the first versions of it will be accessible to us, although I think it's very funny that Sergey was wearing these at a benefit for Foundation for Fighting Blindness in San Francisco with some of the mock-ups. So maybe I'm wrong completely. Maybe he was thinking of blind people all along. But it's neat that that's a possibility. And all sorts of people have come out of the woodwork, like Oakley and others, who said, no, we've been thinking about this too. So maybe there's going to be an arms race. And if it's Google that starts this, you know, ball rolling like Apple does with Siri, for everybody to come out and do a Me Too, then hey, whatever works for us, man, I'm all about access. So I like the concept of this, and I think it would really, really work. For those who aren't familiar or didn't listen to last episode, Project Glass is Google Glasses that would be able to identify things as you're walking down the street, or if you see a poster of a rock band, it would allow you to then go and buy, you know, tickets for that band if you wanted to. It would maybe give you more detailed maps. So if you walked into a shopping mall, it would bring up the heads up of a map already there and say, okay, this is where, your department store of choice is in relation to where you are. So there's some neat ideas about how this is. There's already been some sighted people who've said, I'll never wear glasses. Do they have these in contacts yet? So that's really, and oddly enough, they are working on that. So not necessarily Google, but there's another company that's considering that contacts may be more palatable. Did either one of you guys see Minority Report?
No.
Okay. So the movie Minority Report has a scene where Tom Cruise extracts portions of another person's lenses and retinas, so he can disguise himself. And when he walks into the store, this futuristic store, as he walks in, the cameras detect and actually start displaying ads for the person that he's taken the eyes from. And so he has ads for all these books and movies and types of foods that this other gentleman would like to actually have. So it's interesting because that's what we're looking at. We're looking at a more targeted ad system, but we're also, getting information. We're also getting entertainment. We're also getting things that may necessarily help us that we wouldn't necessarily realize are in the world around us. You know, when people first get GPS, I've met blind people who said, well, I'm sitting in the car with my wife and I didn't even know there was a Starbucks here. You know, I wouldn't have known that if I didn't start searching around. So I like the ability to turn your head and get that information.
I'm as excited as you, Joe, because I immediately thought of things like The Voice, seeing with sound.
Yes.
Peter Meyer. Mm-hmm. Now, if you could integrate that into a pair of Google glasses and hear sounds through earpieces, that didn't block maybe the sound, you could do wonderful things. And you could, if you learned the soundscape, you could almost see around you.
Peter has had some awesome tweets lately. If you follow Peter on Twitter, you can actually get a lot more. I've actually retweeted on that Android show's Twitter feed many of his pieces on Project Glass, because he's been posting a lot of great information about this device. Anna, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I had the same thought that Steve did. I immediately thought of Peter Meyer and The Voice for Android. I also thought about being able to use the glasses as a barcode scanner, and which would be really convenient when I'm out and about. And I thought about OCR. I mean, Google Goggles has some very basic OCR, but having improvements to that worked into the glasses would be great, because I could read my mail at the kitchen table with a cup of coffee, not at my computer, where coffee is not allowed because Anna has had bad accidents.
Oh, expensive accidents, it sounds like.
So I got really excited, and I actually think there would be applications for us even before applications for the general public. And the article mentions that right now it's too early to know what the glasses will be capable of, but it lists a lot of technologies that weren't available even 5 years ago, like face detection, mm-hmm. and face recognition, things like that that could eventually really create a virtual space for us that would be very useful in ways that other technologies haven't been.
even that with the voice, I mean, the voice now has talking face detection, and that was something that I asked for.
Yeah.
You know, and Peter Meyer just put it in.
Yeah.
You know, so it's amazing what you can do already. You just need the glasses with the camera lenses mounted, you know, whatever.
Steve, there can be kind of a crazy viewpoint of security in the United States and how we approach things of privacy. And in the UK, there are cameras everywhere. Does any privacy or security concerns even cross your mind with these glasses that, you know, it recognizes, you know, other people and gives you their names and everything like that? Would that even be a conversation over there?
You mean apart from me wanting X-ray vision?
well, that taken as granted, but yeah. So I mean, we get our knickers in a twist over here about just about anything with security. Would this be a conversation that would even come up, you know, in implied conversation over there?
I couldn't say, but I don't think so. Nothing really occurs to me. I mean, if you're recognizing a name and a face, I would guess that the name would have to be in your contacts or, you know, in whatever database you store it, unless the name is in a database in the cloud, in which case people may, you know, for example, if I came over to the US, Joe, and I walked up to you and I didn't have you in contacts and I said, this is Joe Steinkamp, would you be concerned?
Well, I'm semi-public figure, so if it was, I mean, here's the thing.
Yeah.
If my profile picture was in Facebook, it was available publicly, or I've been tagged in somebody else's photo that you have contacts with, I might worry a bit, like, wait a minute, how did he know? But I don't know if, depending on the setting, of course, I'm not sure that I would think about it too much.
Yeah.
I get your point.
We don't know enough. I mean, you know, if they said, well, it will only recognize a name if that name is in your contacts list,
mm-hmm.
then that would be pretty secure, wouldn't it?
Right. Yeah.
You know, so we don't know what they're going to do.
Correct. And that does beg the question, and I get into this a little bit on Serotalk a couple of weeks ago about, you know, geotagging and geofencing. They're pretty heady concepts, but I think this is unknown territory that we'll just have to stumble in the dark with until we all find what works out best for us. Anna, did you have any ideas about security or any concepts that you wanted to get across here?
As a leftist paranoid type, I think the government knows where I am all the time, so I don't even bother going there because I assume they already know.
Well, there's so, that. It's better that way. Be happy.
It's just better that I know. But the other thing that I thought about with this article is that the article mentions the style factor. You know, people wouldn't want to wear these glasses if they were not attractive. And I actually like the fact that these glasses are being developed for mainstream use because they will be stylish. I remember when I was about 10 years old, I was learning to use, I think it was called the Sonar Guide. It looks like a pair of glasses that gave you audio feedback about your environment, but they were just not attractive. And I remember thinking it's bad enough being a pathetic blind kid without having these horrible glasses to wear. so I was really excited to read that they would be very stylish.
Well, this is where I have to read from the script that my wife prepares for me. I'm not just visually impaired, I'm also style impaired. So anything that works, and again, I imagine you'll have all the different guys out there designing, you know, glasses. As soon as it becomes the in thing, then we'll have Pierre Cardin this and probably, you know, couture that. And so it'll be everywhere, I'm sure. Yeah. Since the last time we had our conversation here, Steve, you were not with us, but on the previous episode, I said it, well, actually two episodes ago, I wish people would just cross-license. Do I get my wish? Does it look like Apple and Samsung have found their differences and we have peace amongst the land? What do we think here about this article that you can find along with our interview with Peter Meyer and all our other great, wonderful shows at www.androidshow.com?
Indeed. Well, I mean, I don't know, to be honest. I mean, I would have thought so because, as the article says, Samsung do make Apple parts, processor in particular. So Apple are already cross-licensing with Samsung in that respect, because they're buying their hardware. So it would be kind of silly not to.
And they're already meeting in a magistrate-judge settlement conference. This is basically a mediation session where everybody decides that this is what we're going to do to play nice together. So even if they don't agree on everything, they usually agree on 50 to 70% of the things that come up at this type of conference. So it sounds like, you know, it'll be a nice and happy, friendly road down the ways.
Cross-licensing is good. I'm just saying. Anything that'll work. And actually, it's funny because after we've had this conversation, there's been a wonderful article over the Apple Viz Forum that talks about gestures and patents that I've been reading that kind of falls into the conversation here. So, you know, if we can find something that gets any type of even playing field to make people feel more comfortable in what they're using, certainly you want to protect the brand and identity and all of that. So when you go into a store and you hold up, say, like a Galaxy Tab, and my mom goes, iPad. And you're like, no, not exactly, you know. So anything you can do to, you know, compete but also still remain your own is important. I get that. But for accessibility, we really do need some of these patents to kind of move aside and some prior art to be kicked across. So that way we have an expectation of how a device should work. And I think, again, this is just so early days onto something like tablet computing in the current era. I think it's just going to take time. Of course, I say that, and then Samsung is thinking about releasing an S-Cloud to compete with iCloud. Well, you guys are on 4.0, so I don't know if the accessibility is going to be a major concern unless those new devices ship with Gingerbread. But do you guys rely on the cloud, or does, would this sway you? If you were interested in a new phone, again, Anna, would the concept of having more features like S Cloud be one of the things you would look for in a phone?
Why, no, because Android already does a lot of this automatically. I mean, it syncs my contacts, and it syncs my music, and it syncs my mail. It just, so much of this is done in the cloud by Google, and it's done right, that I don't get, to me, it sounds like hype, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said before the podcast began that Google have done it right, so I don't know what Samsung could do to tempt me to use S Cloud. probably wouldn't update anyway, knowing my wife's
yeah,
phone.
That's an offline comment. Let's explain just a second. Steve actually has two identical phones, and one of them was not updating, so
it's gone back.
Yeah, that one's going back, but yeah, they probably wouldn't. This one would sync, but the other one wouldn't. It would dominate your Wi-Fi, take over your access point. I get the need to, again, differentiate yourself. This is my phone, and certainly Samsung has demonstrated that they are doing well in this, because behind Apple, actually, they're a little ahead of Apple, depending on who you're talking to, and Nokia. You know, those are the dominant names in phones today. So certainly in the mobile space, Samsung is definitely kicking it. And, you know, we get back into, do you need to have a vanilla version of Android, or the need for these guys to skin it with a blur or a sense or touch?
I'm in two camps here, Joe. If we're talking about skinning, you know, devices.
Mm-hmm.
It annoys me because HTC particularly are pretty bad at making things accessible. But on the other hand, if HTC didn't skin their phone, you're not going to buy any other, you're going to go and look for just any other Android phone over HTC. They've got to put some features in that are unique to HTC. And after all, I mean, Ice Cream Sandwich, to be perfectly frank with you, in Ice Cream Sandwich, Google have stolen some of the ideas of HTC, like the People app,
right,
for example.
Right.
People was HTC before it was Ice Cream Sandwich. It was contacts in Gingerbread for Google, but it was People for HTC People. You know, now Google have gone, oh, People's a better name, we'll do that, you know. So
only in Gingerbread, in Gingerbread and earlier it's not accessible, or not very accessible, whereas in Ice Cream Sandwich it is.
Yeah, and so I don't object to skinning. What I object to is what HTC used to do under Gingerbread, but they don't do it under Ice Cream Sandwich, and that is to remove core components.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is they remove the accessibility components. So you, You don't have TalkBack even. You know, you have to go and get it. You don't have the access, any accessibility. You have to download it from the market. But in Ice Cream Sandwich, they haven't done that, as I understand it. But so skinning is a tough one. I see both sides to the argument.
And it's so difficult to find someone running vanilla Android. I mean, you have to go with one of the Google flagship premier phones to be able to find that Nexus or what have you. And as someone who's still not moved to Ice Cream Sandwich and is now jealous that we have another person on the program who does, we have, a problem with, you know, phones that are still being shipped right now with Gingerbread with the tag that says soon to be upgraded to Ice Cream Sandwich. But part of that is because they haven't figured out how to skin it yet for some of these models. And that really, really depresses me. And you know, I would really love for a option to be able to choose whether I would like to run stock Android over these. You know, that's one of the beauties that I have loved about my LG Ally is that I can jump to Android or jump over to the LG version if I really, really want to. Naturally, I don't. But, you know, it's nice to have choice than it is to have no choice at all and have this thrust upon you, because all that does is make me want to mod all that much more.
Oh, absolutely. And the other problem is that you can't just recommend an Android phone. It has to be an Android phone that doesn't mess with accessibility. And because we don't, I don't know very many people yet who are using Ice Cream Sandwich on HTC Sense or on the Samsung.
Or the brand new X1 or any of the ones that just recently came out.
The one, you mean the One X, by the way? The One X.
The One X. Okay, thank you. Sorry.
I know a guy in the UK who's got the One X. He's a blind guy, and he's actually sent it back because he said the browser wasn't so accessible. You know, it didn't seem to be the stock browser. There were certain things he couldn't do with it. Scripts didn't work straight away. He had to wait for a while before they downloaded and various things like that. And he said there were just some... Oh, and the dialing, the dialer is different. The keyboard is different, so it's not the stock Android keyboard. And that's a real bad thing because you can't set it up out of the box because the HTC keyboard doesn't work with TalkBack.
And
so
it's a shame because... Well, this is why it's very important for you to know your phone return policy and know your buyer's remorse policy, because that can come into play. When I looked at the Droid 4, I went to a Best Buy store, a mobile store, and they have these mock-ups that light up and do some simple things, but they're not actual phones and they're not connected, and so you can only do limited things on them. So you can really basically just hold them and say, yeah, I like the feel of this, and... Yeah, I think I like this. Of course, it's chained to this thing on the table, so I can't really get an idea fully. But, you know, so there's a lot of research that kind of sort of has to be done. And it is daunting for the new Android user to choose the phone that fits their needs, that feels right, the carrier that feels comfortable for them. But it does require a little bit of research to know if that, again, is going to have the version of software that you're shooting for. Now, Sprint has announced... a truckload of ICS phones. We have a link here in the show notes. So Sprint is now coming on into the ICS world. AT&T has started to move into ICS this month, being April that we're recording. Verizon has a couple of options, of course, with the Droid and Razer Max, sorry. And I actually had a conversation with them, and I gave this poor lady over the phone a task. I was like, okay, find me an ICS-enabled hardware keyboard phone. And she, you know, sat there and I waited on hold for a couple of minutes. She comes back and she goes, it really isn't one. And I went, exactly.
That's a whole nother subject. I think hardware keyboards are going away big style.
Well, I still enjoy a hardware keyboard. I know there are people coming over from the BlackBerry platform who enjoy it as well. So there are us strange people who do commune in cabbage patches, and we do exist. But I was depressed. I went over to Droid Police, and they had an actual poll, and it said, "What is your favorite style keyboard?" So there was Swipe and a couple of other alternative keyboards up there, and on there was hardware keyboard. And when I clicked my choice, my hardware keyboard fans and I actually rated under other. As far as numbers of keyboards.
Wow.
So I
really like hardware keyboards.
You were the other one, were you, Joe?
Yes, there are three of us, yes.
Maybe it's the three people on the show, I don't know.
you, You see, again, Joe, I've always had hardware keyboards, buttons, until I went to the Nokia N8, and then I went to the Nexus. And the more you work on a software keyboard, the faster you get, believe me. And I think I don't like hardware keyboards anymore.
Okay.
I'm pretty fast now with... And by the way, Anna, if you really want a good experience with the keyboard, you download eSpeak, because TTS is so laggy compared to eSpeak.
Uh-huh.
And the keyboard rocks. If you can really move around quick and hear the letters really fast at you. But eSpeak, the voice is obviously not very clear, but it's so responsive. It's just like using, say, Eloquence on a PC.
With my fingers, I'd find myself using the Galaxy Note because I'd need that 5-inch screen. And then I'd look funny when I hold a brick up to my head to talk.
Well, newsflash, Joe, the Galaxy Note doesn't still have ice cream sandwich on it.
Well, what else does? No, I'm kidding.
I'm amazed because it's one of the best phones in the world, quad-core, everything else, and it's got gingerbread on it. Amazing, isn't it?
That brings us to our final story, and this is one that I threw in here to kind of get Steve's reaction, because Nokia is not known as much as they used to be in the United States for phones. In fact, they're having a difficult time with the Lumia right now. But Steve, what would you say if the battle was that Nokia didn't go with Windows Phone, that they'd be selling so much better if they'd gone Android? Do you agree with that?
I already had a look at this, and before I answer that, I've got a question for you.
Uh-huh.
Who do you know, for all of you, this is, who do you know, blind or sighted, that has a Windows Phone?
I know one person who still works at my old job.
Anna?
Yeah, no, I don't know anyone.
Well, that answers the question, doesn't it? I mean, that's where Nokia have failed, in my view. Windows Phone has got to do some to pick up the market slack from Android and iOS, if we're honest. I mean, iOS is pretty much up there now in the market. And I think, it's personally, that it's one of the biggest mistakes that Nokia ever made, and they'll regret it.
Well, I had seen people lining up to buy the phone in London on news coverage, and it was... doing well. I'm not sure if those people have then come back and thrown those like bricks at, you know, salespeople. it seems to be a stopgap measure. It certainly seems to be something that people are waiting for Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8, or codename Apollo. And it seems like Nokia is in the same situation where they're also waiting for it. I agree with you. It would be nice to have three platforms to bounce back and forth with, because I don't like the concept of Mozilla doing an operating system, or Facebook getting into the idea of phones, because that's just going to make things really...
I mean, Nokia make beautiful hardware, don't they?
Yeah.
Let's be honest about that. I mean, the N8 is a powerhouse, to be honest. It's a beautiful phone. I still use it occasionally, but I much prefer Android over Symbian. That's nothing to do with the phone. The phone is feature-packed. It's got a 12-megapixel camera, you know. You don't get many phones with that kind of camera, you know. That really rocks, the N8 phone. And, you know, can you imagine a phone like that with, or the Lumia even, with Android on it?
Yeah.
Be cool.
Well, I'm sure there's actually a hacker group out there right now trying to work CyanogenMod or some version of Android for Lumias right as we speak. We'll see how that goes, because the hardware is pretty limited for what you have to run under Windows Phone. I'll let you know if that happens.
Just a final point. The article is saying that at least that according to a European operator who is nameless, the problem is that Windows isn't putting a whole lot of marketing money into pushing that Nokia line. But I really think that that's because they're waiting for Windows 8 to make the big hurrah and the big announcement and all the fanfare. And I think that's what they're sitting on.
Yeah, nobody wants to sit on tons of inventory. I mean, you know, certainly that's not what anybody wants to do. And AT&T is a big partner here in the States. There's a lot of speculation that Android has moved more rapidly in emerging markets than anybody realized. India, China, and other places. Yeah. So there was some thought that Nokia could sweep in with Windows Phone and wow the masses over people using feature phones. But Android has just moved so quickly in those markets that they're like, already got that. thanks for coming by.
Well, Android is it just offers so much, and if you can offer a lot for $100, you know, in a country where that's a lot of money, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, I've been asked this, you know, a zillion times, and I'll say it again. Not only do I love hardware keyboards, and that's kind of why I'm in the Android camp. I prefer Android because of the options and the availability and all of that. And I do have an iDevice, but I connect my iDevice up to my Android hotspot, you know, so I do the best of both worlds. But for phones, yeah. I find, you know, Android to be more reliable, and that's why my next phone will still be an Android. So, well, that's it for the news at this point, and we're going to kick it over to some app reviews. And Steve, Anna, thanks for hanging in with me, and I will see you guys on another episode. And in the meantime, let's catch some wonderful comments, and then, of course, your mailbag with all your comments coming up in a little bit on That Android Show.
In the spirit of my co-host, JJ Meadow, I'm going to review three apps in 3 minutes. The first two apps work on 2.2 and above. The third app works on Ice Cream Sandwich only. The first app is called Up Sound Down. It puts your phone in speaker mode when you put it into different positions. Once you install the app, simply launch it.
Up Sound Down. Up Sound Down. Not checked.
Focuses on a check mark. You can't arrow anywhere if you're using a physical navigational controller in Gingerbread or earlier. Simply press the selector.
Checked.
Now the app is ready to go.
Launcher. Phone incoming. Call contact. Photo home 559.
Hello, this is Anna.
Hello, this is Anna.
You can press the menu button to select what behavior puts the phone into speaker mode.
Options. Settings. Up sound down settings. Mode selection. Select which mode enables loudspeaker.
The phone can go into speaker mode if you flip the phone vertically so that the speaker is pointing up and the earpiece is pointing down. Or the phone can go into speaker when it's sitting on the table, screen facing up or screen facing down. The second app is called Classic Weather. It puts the current temperature and weather conditions in your notification area.
19 degrees C, 18 degrees / 8 degrees overcast wind, NW, at 10 miles per hour humidity. 68% Fry, 20 degrees / 10 degrees sat, 26 degrees / 12 degrees sun, 30 degrees / 14 degrees.
Since it knows your location, it'll even tell you the weather, whether you're home or out shopping. Weather is updated every hour.
Fresno 21 degrees C.
But you can change that in the settings. Temperature is given in centigrade, so those of us who live in Fahrenheit countries need to contact the developer. The third app is called Chime Time. It turns your Android phone into a clock. It chimes every hour as a grandfather clock would.
Aberdeen.
And it chimes once during the half hour.
Aberdeen.
You have a number of clocks to choose from. If you're using Ice Cream Sandwich, use Explore by Touch to read the settings.
Enable chimes. Volume, shake to stop, easy, hard. Seat control 80%. Aberdeen. Get more clocks. Chiming times, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m.
In earlier versions of Android, items appear to be unlabeled. You can change the volume of the chime by moving your finger left and right along the slider, or by tapping the ends of the slider.
Seat control 80%, seat control 53%, seat control 76%, seat control 80%.
I hope you enjoyed these three apps. Up Sound Down, which puts your phone in speaker mode. Classic Weather Notification, which puts current temperature and other weather conditions in the notification area. And for users of Ice Cream Sandwich, Chime Time, which turns your Android phone into a groovy clock.
Looking for a cross-platform solution to quickly convert printed materials and PDFs into text, MP3, or DAISY formats? Check out Cerotech's DocuScan Plus. For just $299, use DocuScan Plus on your Windows or Mac computer. store documents in the cloud for easy retrieval, and access them from anywhere. For more information, visit www.docuscanplus.com.
Some debates are worth having.
Apple.
Android.
No, smooth versus crunchy peanut butter, man.
But we solve the world's biggest problems. On the Serotalk Podcast Network, of course.
Today we're talking to G Dollar, who is a developer at Escape Technology, LLC, developer of such apps as Text Talk and Dictator. The first few questions are going to be just general background questions, because it's always exciting to know about a developer. And later on, we'll get more into accessibility. So the first question is, how did you become interested in developing for Android in the first place?
That is a good question. I'm not sure. I was just kind of drawn to it. I did a lot on the emulator before I actually ever had a device. And, you know, just the fact that the development tools are freely available and pretty easy to use for someone who's skilled. And I don't know. Programming for me is just like a hobby. So I think it was just natural that I would find my way to it.
Now, you have about 12, maybe a few more apps on the Play Store, and they range from games to productivity apps. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about a few of them, just to give them a sense of the kinds of things you've developed?
Okay. One of my first apps was a darts scorecard application for people that play O1 and cricket. Another one of my early apps was a call log assistant application that would help you deal with your call log. One early problem a lot of people had was keeping their favorites clean.
Yes.
Because, you know, anybody that would call would show up in your recently called. So I tried to address that need with that application. And a few more additional features just kind of followed along after that. The most recent feature I have in there now is text-to-speech on incoming calls. Another app that I have is a RSS reader called Feed Farmer. Another app that I have is a to-do list application called To Done. And that's kind of a pun because I think that category has been kind of too done.
Yes.
So, you know, I don't let that stop me from trying it. So, no matter how crowded a genre is, I just got to go for it anyway.
Well, and you also have some things that are kind of wild and wacky. You have like a mood ring app or something.
Oh, yeah. I was really fascinated by all the different sensors. So I wanted to try to give other people a way to like play with that. And I was also kind of fascinated with the color wheel at that time. So it all just kind of came right together.
Do you have a philosophy when it comes to developing, or is it whatever you're interested in at the moment?
You know, it is kind of whatever I'm interested in at the moment. It's kind of like a kitten with the shiny thing in front of it. Like, oh, I want to work on that now. And sometimes the other apps will suffer as I chase the new shiny idea.
Well, that's good. I mean, it suggests that you're excited about developing at least whatever it is you're working on now, which is cool.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, I have to keep changing things around or I start to lose interest a little bit. So that's why I have so many listings on the market right now.
Now, as you've been developing and as you've been posting things on the market, have you learned anything about app design in general or about end users in general? Anything that's helped you develop your apps over the years?
Well, definitely. My day job is also as a software developer, and I'm pretty far along in my career. I don't want to put a number of years on it.
Yeah, no.
Who does?
Yeah, exactly. So I draw on that a lot, and I've learned a lot over the years. My attitude towards users has changed drastically, I would say, since I first started developing. Now I try to listen to what the users are telling me as much as possible.
Do you find that difficult to do across the many different flavors of Android? Do you find yourself saying, okay, that feature I know would work better if you weren't on this version, or, you know, do you shoot for a certain target version? Or is it more kind of an overall kind of approach and let the chips fall where they may, do you think?
That's a good question. I kind of do a little bit of both because I'm kind of limited in access to devices. Right now I'm targeting like 2.3, and if it works on a higher level, I feel good about it. I try not to do too much with the lower API levels just because now I don't have a device I can test on, and a lot of things just don't program as well, like especially speech recognition.
Right.
So I try to target like Froyo and Hire for my speech recognition, especially now.
And the other thing about end users, because you obviously read the market review comments, and you've also been on the Eyes Free list lately, and I think some comments are more productive than others. Do you find it difficult to sort through the comments to find the real point that the commenter is making?
That's a really good question, because I find the comments that people leave on Google Play to be kind of frustrating. You've seen what my ratings are, so I get a lot of one star, you suck kind of reviews. Mm-hmm. So it's like, thanks for helping me on that, you know?
Exactly.
Exactly. I appreciate the feedback. Could you, I don't know, use maybe definite articles next time in your review? No.
Yes. Perhaps use some punctuation and I don't know.
But out of that, you can still sometimes mine for gold and find a nugget of truth, even though it can be either cryptic or crass. Sometimes there may be something in the UI, or there might be some, well, you've got a point. I really wish you've kind of softened it a bit, but.
No, you're right. There are people out there that do leave helpful things, but then, you know, it's one-way communication. I have trouble following up with those people.
Yeah.
That's why I enjoy being on the Eyes Free group, because you get a lot of good feedback. And then I also have a social network on Ning set up for people to gravitate to if they also want to reach out and be a part of the community.
Yeah, you do. You have a very nice community. You have like a whole forum that people can interact with you, which is nice. Now, speaking of accessibility, you have recently developed two apps, Dictator and Text Talk, that have accessibility features. Why don't you spend a little time telling us what these apps do and what features may be especially interesting to blind or visually impaired users?
Okay. Dictator is a dictation-taking application. It allows you to use speech recognition, and it basically stores a database of your note-taking. And the Ning tie-in is real good on that, because one of my users on Ning, he was using Dictator and he was a disabled user. And he reached out to me and saying, hey, can you improve this? Can you improve that? It would work a lot better for accessibility. And I'm like, well, of course. You know, I was very clear about what I needed to do. And I researched it a little bit and I found that it's not really that hard to set content description on everything.
So is that how you got interested in accessibility and how you started paying attention to it? I mean, most developers don't really know it exists.
No, and you know what? I'm afraid I was one of those people.
Mm-hmm.
And that is actually what drew me in the direction of making sure that my apps are accessible. And then I think ultimately Dictator ended up being quite accessible.
Yeah, it's...
Now, I'm not impaired or anything, so it's hard for me to tell.
How do you test it? Are you basing yourself on user comments, or do you test it yourself using the screen reader? What do you do?
Well, to be honest, I don't use a screen reader, so I depend on other people that are using it to tell me, hey, this doesn't read out or whatever, and then usually it's pretty simple for me to fix it. Because normally, from my standpoint, it's usually just a missing content description or something of that nature.
Yeah,
with unlabeled buttons, stuff like that.
Yeah, I emailed you earlier a couple of days ago, and one of the things I've noticed about your apps, even the ones that are not designed with accessibility in mind, they're actually pretty accessible, and the glitches are pretty minor. I mean, which is good. Some apps are a nightmare, but yours are pretty good.
Did you find the documentation that's available for developers to be helpful in providing accessibility, or was it really kind of more of a user experience that helped kind of add those layers into your applications?
The users helped a lot. From a technical standpoint, like I said, I keep mentioning this content description that's actually a property on the user interface elements. And whatever you put there is what the screen reader will read out. So once, from a programming standpoint, once you're aware of those things, then you know it's fairly straightforward to make sure that everything will say something appropriate. After that, I just depend on feedback from everybody.
Is there anything, aside from the content descriptions, or is there anything special you need to keep in mind when developing for accessibility? I mean, is there something you need to remind yourself to do?
Yeah, because I do like to use image buttons and they won't read anything out. So sometimes I'll forget to put the content description on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it though. Because as you found, my other apps are relatively accessible and I wasn't really doing anything special.
Yeah. So how can users contact you to give you feedback? Where would they go?
You can go to Ning. You can go to Eyes Free on Google. Or you can email me. It's escape.technology.llc@gmail.com. And I'm always welcoming positive feedback.
And what kinds of details help you understand the problem best? I mean, how can a user give you comment that will be helpful?
Well, if they're describing a problem, usually like a recipe for how you can reproduce it. Because if I can't reproduce it, then it's really hard for me to fix.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the best I can do. And then usually after several turns of conversation, we can narrow it down to something specific.
So would it be something like, this is what's happening when I do A, B, and C, and what I would like is for this other thing to happen? Is that kind of the formula for helpful feedback?
Yep, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found that knowing the model of phone makes any difference? Some betas that we've been involved with, for them to be able to troubleshoot, sometimes knowing the model or the carrier can even help them in some greater detail. Would that also be helpful?
Sure, any demographic information is usually helpful. And especially if I can't reproduce it on my devices that I have on hand, which isn't that many.
The life of a programmer.
That's right. Programmer with a different
Those ice cream tablets are getting cheaper and cheaper. So
yeah.
Now
we're saving up for one.
What upcoming changes or features are you planning to add to any of your apps? Or I think you have a chance here to plug whatever you like. So tell us about how groovy your apps are and what's in the future for them.
All right. Well, I'm actually really excited about Text Talk because I'm actually putting in like proactive speech and use of speech recognition right into the app. So you don't have to rely on the screen reader as much. I want it to be really more conversational.
Oh, wow.
So I'm not having to manipulate the D-pad or trackball to make it tell me what's going on. It should just talk to me, and I should be able to talk back.
That would be great.
So there's going to be more of that coming in Text Talk, and I'm also planning on doing a full MMS version, complete messaging app.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I get through this initial period, I'm still collecting a lot of good feedback from everybody, and I want to thank the people that have giving me feedback, and really just more of the same.
That's excellent.
I want conversational software.
That would be nice, especially I spend a lot of time on the road, and it would be very convenient to be able to just tell the phone who I want to text and then deliver the message and be done with it. That'd be great.
It is, and that's kind of what I'm trying to work towards.
Yeah, excellent. Well, thank you. Well,
thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the show, and give us your website so that people can visit it.
Okay, on Ning, it is escape-mobile.ning.com. That is the best way to get in touch.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, and it's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you guys, too, and I look forward to listening to more of your podcasts.
Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's Joe, and I'm back to talk about apps, and this time I'm going to talk about an app on my LG Ally version 2.2.2, and we're going to use TuneIn Radio. I've heard a lot about this app. Everybody keeps telling me that it's an app I need to have, and you know what? I think they're right. So I'm going to go into the app, and I'm just going to go over the front page here.
Local radio, 1 of 10. Recents, 2 of 10. Recommended, 3 of 10. Music, 4 of 10. News, 5 of 10. Sports, 6 of 10. Talk, 7 of 10. By location, 8 of 10. By language, 9 of 10. Podcasts, 10 of 10.
Now, the app is amazing in that you can search by a specific market, or you can search by location where it kind of sort of assumes where you are, especially if you're between markets, and gives you local stations that are in your area on an amazing database. It has got 50,000 stations or so it says. I feel pretty confident in that that's a really good number. And there's about 800 stations that are blocked out, iHeartRadio, which is Clear Channel, and some others do keep their feeds private. You can get to some in your area, not all. I've also found that local content and looking specifically for a site, let's say Houston, can actually give me two different listings. So I actually found stations that were not listed by my market, but I also didn't find stations that were listed in local content. So you probably want to do both to learn what's around you and what's available. Let's go up to sports.
Sports. 6 of 10. Search. 1 of 2. Washington Capitals at New York Rangers. 3 of 26. ESPN. 5 of 20. Search. 1 of 2.
Now, I'm not hitting the search button. That's just defaulting where the cursor thinks where speech is, where it's speaking, actually. So every time I'm hitting something, it's defaulting me back to search, but I'm not actually hitting search.
ESPN Chicago Open Parent, ESPN Dallas Open Parent.
Let's take a listen to ESPN Dallas.
TuneIn Radio.
It does buffer a little here.
Report a problem. 1 of 5.
Moms or mother-in-laws or wives, make them feel special with a beautiful floral bouquet
ESPN
from 1-800-Flowers.com.
Okay, so that was an ad for that particular station, so I'm getting the live feed. The neat thing about this particular app is that I arrowed down to be able to get to the stop button. It's a very simple app, but I can actually...
ESPN Dallas, first for sports in Dallas/Fort Worth. ESPN Dallas. First for sports in Dallas/Fort Worth. 00:00. 4 of 5.
The reason why I read it twice is it read the actual logo off to the side, then it read the text. So the picture was labeled, so it read it twice. I can actually arrow left and right.
ESPN Dallas. First for sports in ESPN Dallas/ESPN. Report a problem. 1 of 5. Now playing. 2 of 5. Choose stream. 3 of 5. Set alarm. 4 of 5.
So
set sleep timer. 5 of 5.
Set sleep timer, which I think is just really neat.
ESPN Dallas sets set choose now. Report a problem. 1 of 5. Report a problem. Your presets are empty. To add a preset, just click on the percent image percent icon in the top left corner of the now playing screen. Then swipe left on the now playing screen to access your presets at any time. 4 of 6.
So you can add presets. I haven't bothered to do that. I generally don't need that feature, but I can see why some do. You can actually long press on a lot of things to be able to get to them to add to things.
Join the conversation. Edit field.
So there's like a chat feature here. Again, that's not something I'm interested in, and I'm not going to go into it during the scope of this review.
105.3 The Fan. Richie and Grego. 3 of 15. KRZI, Central Texas Sports Leader, The Ticket, KFNC-FM is the only place. 5 of 15.
So stations that are related to that that are in my area. And if I play enough stations here, it'll actually give me a list of stations that I've already recently played, which is also a neat.
Menu. Car mode. 1 of 5.
Car mode gives you a ability to use this like a heads-up display if you were using it in your car, so you can just touch it across rather than have a bunch of buttons that are very difficult or hard to swipe through.
Accounts. 2 of 5.
Accounts are that you can use the pro version of this. The version that I'm using right now is free. The pro version actually is 99 cents and allows you to record programmings or songs or certain shows that you like. I believe from what I read on the reviews that it's stored up in the cloud, not necessarily on your phone.
Settings. 3 of 5. Click.
So I'm going to click settings.
TuneIn Radio settings. Window. Want to record your favorite stations and shows? Get me TuneIn Pro now. 1 of 9.
So the ability to upsell right into that.
Show logos while browsing. Displays a thumbnail of each station or show next to its name. Disable to save bandwidth. Checked. 2 of 9. Auto restart player. Restart last played stream when the app starts up. Not checked. Buffer before play. Pre-dash buffer 5 seconds before play. Open parent. Increasing buffer time may cause slower start but a smoother continued play experience. Close parent. 4 of 9. Disable auto lock. Enable to prevent screen locking. Not checked. Shake for related. Shake your device to discover new stations. Not checked. Choose fastest stream. Disable only if you experience problems when starting a station. Checked. 7 of 9. Push notifications. Disable only if you would not like to receive messages. Checked. 9 of 9. TuneIn Radio. About. Support. Privacy. 10 of 9.
Okay, so that's the settings. In one of the reviews that I read on the Play Market, prior to recording this, someone had said that the push notifications portion of the program is rather chatty. and that person didn't happen to like it. I've been using the app now for about a half a week, and I have not run into any chattiness from this. In fact, I don't think I've seen a push notification yet, so I'm not exactly sure how that works. But just so you know, one of the reviews on the Play Market said that the notifications are somewhat disturbing in that you get a lot of them. So you can disable that if you want.
Tune in radio. Window. Menu. Setting. Help. 4 of 5. Exit. 5 of 5.
Help takes you to websites, so you might want to use a mobile accessibility browser, or you may want to use the ICS browser if you have it. If you're running Ice Cream Sandwich, this app has been updated recently to run on Ice Cream Sandwich and tablets in a more easy manner.
Tune in radio.
I'm going to get back here to the main screen.
ESPN. 5 of 26. Sports. Talk. By location. 8 of 10. By language.
So we're going to go back up here.
Recents. To local radio. 1 of 10.
The app has a button on the left, which is not spoken. If I go to the left and arrow up once, it puts me on a different screen.
Presets. 4 of 7. Songs. 4 of 7.
And this is what I was talking about earlier with long presses.
This is your songs tab. When you add a song from the station page, it is automatically saved here for your future reference. If at any point you'd like to delete a song, just press and hold on the song listing to launch the delete confirmation menu. 5 of 7.
Now, it will capture if the RDS stream is available, and that's radio description service or something to that effect. So if it's tagged and labeled, it'll grab it, and you can just move it on over there. Of course, you have to use the ability to long press to be able to get that to work. Remember, to record things, you'll need TuneIn Radio Pro. So I'm actually going to arrow back and down arrow one. Again, those are not spoken. This is the default screen here.
Recents. 2 of 10. Recommended. 3 of 10. Music. 4 of 10.
Right.
Local radio. 1 of 10.
So I'm going to just do local radio real quick.
88.3 bar AFR talk open paren Christian close paren 88.7 bar KUHF open paren public 88.7 HD2 bar QHA open paren classical close paren.
So if it's available, paren QHA close paren. It will find the HD2 signals, and there were actually some stations that had HD2 and HD3 that I didn't even know existed. You start off with the FM band, and then you'll work your way down to NOAA weather radio. And you'll also get to the AM band. At the very, very bottom here, though.
ESPN. Waller County Sheriff Dispatch open paren scanner close paren. Conroe Fire, EMS, and Police open paren fire close paren. Anderson North County Fire open paren fire close paren. 1620 bar WTAW open paren talk close paren. Laura Ingraham Show. 61 of 64.
So that's really neat, and you can find Spanish or English. Since I'm in Texas, I have a lot of both. The app is very simple to use. Swipe up, swipe down, or just use your arrow keys to go up and down. It's free. That's often the best part about these reviews, is if we can find a good, accessible, free app. I found that it works out fairly well. I didn't have any crashes. It has updated recently, and this recording being done at the end of April of 2012. So I hope that helps. It's a great app. Go grab it. It is one of those Android apps that everybody tells you you should have, and they're right. It really is something you want to go check out. Look for TuneIn Radio on the Play Market.
I'm Sarah, and this is my story.
I'm Ellen, and this is my story.
One night, I was at a bar. I was having fun with my friends. I had one too many drinks. I got behind the wheel to go home.
I got a cab to go home.
All of a sudden, from out of nowhere, a squirrel ran across the road. It happened so quickly, I barely had time to react.
The cabbie barely had time to react.
I swerved.
The cab swerved.
I can't believe it. I hit a guy.
I cannot believe it. The cabbie just missed a guy.
I wish I took a cab.
Thank goodness I took a cab.
You have the choice to save a life. Don't drive buzzed. It's a decision you'll never regret. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Wow, I never really open the mailbag on any of our shows. This is kind of, you know what? I'm not. Anna, why don't you open up the mailbag for us?
Oh my goodness, I have all this responsibility. I don't know how to deal with it. Where is JJ when we need him?
Exactly.
Okay.
All right, just pull here.
The first email is from our good friend of the show, Mike Arrigo, and he says he likes the Blind Bargains app, and he points out that he likes that this app was released on both platforms and that it should be done this way more often, which we agree with. We think it's good that JJ chose to do that. He also reminds us that the Bookshare app is now officially out. It's called Go Read, and it reads Bookshare books, which is interesting to people in the United States, but it also reads EPUB books, I believe, so that may be interesting to other people.
Wow, that means a lot of EPUB readers are popping up that are accessible. That's kind of cool.
Very groovy. Now, we also have a letter from Al Bickel. I hope I'm not mispronouncing your name. He has an HTC phone. It's a Merge. When he updated to 2.3 Gingerbread, he started having trouble with mobile accessibility. The problem is that when he uses volume up to answer the phone doesn't get answered. This is an issue. You might want to check the eyes-free list. It's come up before on the list, and you may also want to contact Code Factory about it. I seem to remember that many users with 2.3 devices have this problem. I'm not sure if it's an HTC issue or a 2.3 issue, but I know some people have had problems with this while others have not.
Well, this brings up a kind of interesting thing. Do you auto-update? Do you allow Google Play to go in there and update things automatically? Or are you one of those that wants to be able to say, yes, you go, but you stay?
I do a little of both. There are certain apps that I like, and I go ahead and auto-update them. Others, I've noticed over the course of my almost 2 years with Android that sometimes they're more accessible and sometimes they're less accessible. So sometimes I just don't auto-update those. I wait to find out what other people are saying. I do the chickeny thing. And then there are certain apps like Facebook, which I just do not update at all.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes it's like, do you want to install just these updates? No, I just want to uninstall everything. Can
exactly.
Can I find a way to you just get out of there?
The only version of Facebook that works is the one that came with my phone, so it's not changing.
Well, I have such low memory on my Ally, and so many of these apps are growing exponentially because they think the memory is there.
Yes.
So Google Plus is a perfect example. Before you move it over to the SD card, that puppy's like 22 meg, and it's like, wow. And then when you move it over to SD, it's about 12, so it's a little easier to deal with. But and that's another issue too. If you have an app that auto updates and it needs to be on the phone, you have to shoot it over and pull it off the SD card and let it update, then move it back so you can still have that space. And that's more of an older Android issue and certainly more of an issue for older phones. But I tend to be one of these guys that says, I'll go to the market and I'll update when I want to update, and I'll hang here until, like you said, until the coast is clear. There are very few apps I just feel like I have to run and update automatically. And part of that's Netflix and iOS that kind of burned me. So I'm kind of staying back, and I'll just let it all go. We have an email here also from George who asks about Chromebooks and Chromebook accessibility. George, to be honest with you, Chromebooks just updated to a new desktop and more. And I haven't necessarily looked into some of the information out there for accessibility, but it's something that I think we at Saratech actually play around with Chromebooks all the time. So I may actually have to ask a friend on staff what he's using in his resources. We may have to come back to that for you, but we appreciate the question. And if you do know of any information out there that's great for accessibility for Chromebooks or learning tools for Chrome, the Chromium OS, that is, on Chromebooks, let us know. Drop us a line at resources@saratalk.com.
And we have an email from Chad Baker, who's interested in getting a tablet, and he'd like to know which ones work with TalkBack. JJ talked about that a little on our last episode, so you might want to check that out. There's also been a post recently about that on the Eyes Free list, so you might want to check both sources out.
Yeah, he's got the Arcos G9. And I actually retweeted, I believe, a review of that from G4. And the only thing that they disliked about that was that it had a hard drive on board rather than a solid state drive. So you wouldn't want to necessarily play baseball with it. The Arcos, though, I had an Arcos 504 and I enjoyed it immensely. Arcos is really good about the modding community and actually is very good about providing lots of firmware updates. So that's a fairly decent reviewed tablet. Some people are looking forward to the new Asus tablet that is a 10.1, is going to be in the $350 to $399 range and will have a keyboard dock with an extra battery for an extra $100. That sounds pretty interesting. It will come shipped with ICS. We're starting to see more and more devices as we get closer to the summer that are coming with Android 4.0 installed for a change, not the dreaded will be updated soon tag. Yes. Also, Samsung has some new tablets that are coming out in May and part of the summer. So there's definitely some new things from them coming that are going to have Android on board. Samsung is also announcing which parts of the Galaxy line are going to get their ICS updates. The cool thing is that if you want something more robust, you might want to just hang on a little bit longer for these new ice cream sandwich tablets to roll through. If you're looking for something that might be a little cheaper, like say through Gazelle or something like that, you might be able to find it, but you're going to be playing the Russian roulette wheel of will it get the update or not? And if so, can I mod it? And so there's no real easy answer. We also have a couple of emails for people to ask us to review some phones. We'd love to do that. We're working towards that. But to be honest with everyone, there are just so many and there are so many carriers and what would work here in the U.S. wouldn't necessarily work internationally. And it's one of the reasons why we asked Steve to come on the show is that Steve has access to some phones that we don't. And so he can provide some great information about a great deal more phones than JJ, Anna, and I have access to. So we're working towards that. But at the moment, it's really just our personal devices because there's just, like every other day, open up a box of breakfast cereal and look, an Android pops out, which is awesome because that means there's always new stuff and there's always great devices coming down the pike. But Android Police and some other sites that we've, Droid Life that we've linked to in the past are great places to get an idea of a hands-on or a heads up. The good news is that in most of those situations, the ice-free shell list is really good at providing the ice-free list is really good at providing people who usually found one or have touched one. And that'll help you know because someone, as they did in this email, asked, did it have TalkBack or not? It's hard to say. If it's stock Android, probably. It's probably something you may have to download later, like Steve said earlier in the show. And let's finish up with an iReport from Matt. He actually is on the second week of his tour of Ice Cream Sandwich. Yay. Let's see what he has to say about it.
Hey, guys. How's it going? It's Matt again. This is my second week of using Android 4.0. It's working great. Just wanted to give you guys like a quick heads up on a really cool app that has become quite accessible with the release of Android 4.0. It's called Zedge. Z, and then the word Edge. It's an app for ringtones, text tones, and you can even upload your own stuff. So just thought I'd call in and let you guys know. Awesome app. I've actually downloaded quite a few custom ringtones and text tones from it. So anyways, Android 4.0 is awesome, and I hope they keep on building on it. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt, for that report. That really helps out a lot. Again, if you have been exploring, having fun, want to let us know about what's out there in the world of Android, we are always interested in hearing what you have to say. You can leave us an iReport in the lovely iBlink Radio app, which was recently updated on the Play Market.
Yay.
So you can go there and grab it there. And of course, if you have an Apple device, you could use the iReport feature over there on that version of iBlink. We won't say anything. It's okay. Resources at Saratalk.com is our email. You can also leave us a line over at twitter.com/thatandroidshow. Or leave us a comment on the blog, which is over there at www.thatandroidshow.com. Well, that's going to bring us to pretty much a close on this particular JJ-less episode of That Android Show. Anna, this has felt really, really strange. I don't know what to say.
I know. I miss my buddy.
Yeah. We don't have that man leading us through the charge and telling us, well, the HTC charge, and letting us know which things work out best and all of that. So, you know, you can follow JJ, blindbargains.com, and of course him on Blind Bargains at Twitter. And of course, don't forget androidaccess.net,
which is an awesome site, or you can visit my blog at accessibleandroid.blogspot.com.
And Steve, as he said, is available over at blind_geek on Twitter, if I remember correctly. If not, I will hear about it, I'm sure. And you can also follow this lovely show at thatandroidshow.com. So until we see you next time.
Bye-bye.